Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. This week on the podcast, we have Reverend Justin Spurlock. Justin is a pastor at Grace Presbyterian up in Highlands Ranch. He's also a very dear friend of mine. He gave the charge at my installation service here at New Hope. And a lot of you were asking about him and who he was and how I knew him. I thought I'd have him on the podcast, then you can hear all about it. So enjoy the conversation. Was it the second year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, where? It was the second year.
No, I know.
You're right. Once again, you are right. Yeah, because Michelle was in West her first year, and then with Sarah. Yeah.
Exactly.
So you moved in 2009. We're recording. So if you...
Oh, we're recording right now. Fantastic.
That's why then it feels authentic.
It's it not is like... totally authentic. And yes, I was right, Jordan.
Michelle and I were RAs at Trinity Christian College in Palos Heights, Illinois. And then you and Sarah moved to Chicago in 2009?
We moved in 2008 to Chicago. We were in and around... the University of Chicago and McCormick Seminary there, McCormick Theological Seminary, where I went to seminary. And then after my first year there, we moved out to Trinity, where my wife, Sarah, took a job as the residence director of Alumni Hall at Trinity Christian College. And it, lo and behold, your wife, well, future wife, Michelle, was one of Sarah's RAs.
Yeah. And... what was interesting, I think how we all got connected more was because, Sarah was Michelle's boss, and so spent a lot of time in your apartment.
Yes.
At the dorm. And then I found out you were, what would you call yourself at the time? Pastor, going to seminary.
I was going to seminary and serving as the director of family life ministries at Christ United Methodist Church in Deerfield, Illinois.
And but you had already been ordained in the Baptist
tradition? I had been ordained as a pastor in the Christian Missionary Alliance, which is a smaller evangelical denomination. And that had happened in 2001 after I graduated from college in Indiana. So, yeah.
Yeah, but then you're working at Methodist Church, going to McCormick. Because you, if I remember right, you worked at a church in, what's that place called in California?
Fresno. Yes.
And that was Presbyterian.
Yes, correct? So I became Presbyterian when I was in Fresno. Entered the inquiry process with the Presbytery of San Joaquin out in California and came to McCormick for a couple of reasons. One, I was obviously on the wanting to become an ordained Presbyterian minister, so that helped with that. And two, I was looking for an experience that was very different and diverse from my own, and so McCormick fostered that as it's an urban seminary, as I mentioned earlier, right in the vicinity of the University of Chicago, south side of Chicago, being a white, straight, middle-class male Presbyterian isn't exactly what the south side of Chicago looks like. And so I was looking for that sort of experience. I wanted to experience lots of different other people and their particular perspectives and how it might affect my own.
So you and I kind of had the similar thought process of going to Chicago because I grew up farm town Iowa.
Precise.
And everybody in my area would go to the two local Christian colleges, Dort College and Northwestern College. And that's... you know, probably where my parents wanted me to go too, but I wanted to experience something different. Like you said, something that was a little more diverse, urban, and get that experience. And so Chicago's a perfect place for that.
Yes.
Chicago, even the greater Chicago area, is just this melting pot of cultures, ethnicities. It's an interesting place.
It is, yeah. It's a great place to... I think the perfect example is when you go into the mall and anywhere around Chicago and you look around and there is a variety of ethnicities, cultures, races, styles. I mean, people just... It's a lot of diversity all in one place. And I found it both fascinating and enjoyable and really broaden my own experience.
Yeah. It's a... one of the things that I noticed when I moved to Denver, which we could talk about how we followed you places.
Well, you followed me places? No way.
But when we moved to Denver, I remember thinking, since I was used to the diversity of Chicago, mm-hmm. like how white Denver is.
Yes.
Even though there's places that are more diverse, but absolutely. Overall, yes. It's very...
and particularly in comparison to a place like Chicago or New York or LA or any of those sort of places, it's very homogenous mm-hmm. here for the most part.
Yeah, so in seminary, I think, when was the time that we actually started hanging out more? Was it when I needed help with Hebrew? Or not Hebrew, Greek?
It started to happen a little bit before that. So spring of 2010, you had begun to start exploring your faith maybe a little differently than the typical Reformed Church of America, Christian Reformed Church of America sort of student at Trinity. You... often would come into our apartment while I was working on a paper for seminary and interrupted
your homework
my whole focus and train of thought, which was fine. It was just 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, what, you know,
you still had time.
I still had plenty of time. And, obviously my papers and assignments were both from a rigorous standpoint, at a higher caliber than, say, your undergrad, Christian ministries program. And from a topical standpoint, very different than the kind of classic Reformed Church of America sort of training you're getting undergrad, at Trinity. Yeah. Yeah. And so that spurred a lot of conversations, I think, that interested you as well as other folks, right? And so it wasn't mm-hmm. like it was just you and me hanging out, around my dining room table. There was often several other folks. And then I think that fall is when you started taking Greek, and that was a difficult process, to say the least, for you. And honestly, right. had more to do with, I think, your professor than it did with you, because yeah. in seminary you thrived in Greek, so
not and I Hebrew,
right? That's
I
right
did you really well in Hebrew.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you are the Hebrew guy.
Yeah,
yeah,
but I couldn't really tell you much about it now.
About well Hebrew, you know? I mean, let's be honest, the folks listening to this podcast would not know, generally speaking, whether you knew anything about Hebrew or not. You could make it up and it would be fine.
That's true. I mean, I can, if I sit down with a Hebrew book and Hebrew scripture for long enough, I can start figuring things out again, but right. not off the top of my head.
Right. And that's because you are a pastor now, though.
Right. And yeah. so you don't.
Don't exactly enter into the original language of scripture on a regular basis.
And if I do, I have other people do it for me by yes. reading commentaries that talk about it.
Precisely. Yes. And if you did have the time to do that, probably means that something else that's probably on a higher priority level is not getting taken care of. So. at least that's my opinion.
Right, right. I do, thinking back, I do think it could have been probably the professor. But I probably also wasn't ready for it at the time. Mm-hmm. It was like an elective. It wasn't something that was needed for my degree.
Correct.
And so how hard do you work towards that? Especially something that hard in college,
Right. particularly when you're already in my apartment at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Are you harboring some ill feelings about me coming into
just saying there were some close calls on me getting my assignments done. And I could blame myself, but it's a whole lot easier to blame you. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember, so there was this, college was the time where I started questioning, my beliefs as they were, particularly just kind of that, what many people don't understand about where I grew up in the Reformed Church, where I grew up, it acted very much as a evangelical, mm-hmm. Fundamentalist,
sure.
type of theology.
Yeah.
Which, getting into college and then seminary, I'm like, wait, that's not really our theology of the Reformed Church or,
right.
you know, Presbyterian. And so some of that stuff was starting to kind of shake off already in college. And as you know, in those areas, politics and Christianity get very much melded together.
Yes.
I remember a particular conversation with you and Chris Bull
mm.
in the stairwell in South Hall.
Yep.
I think we were, it was about climate change. And if there was climate change or global right. warming and things like that.
Right, yeah.
And then you guys were challenging me on that of like, if we need to make a big shift in order to set up new, cleaner, efficient fuels and things like that, a cleaner earth, then the government's going to be the only thing that's going to be able to.
That's large enough to do large anything enough about to do, it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And I don't know why that always sticks in my mind.
Yeah.
At that time.
Well, I remember the conversation vividly, and Chris Bull, who was another residence director, obviously at Trinity.
He was my RD at uh-huh. the time.
Had been pushing you a little bit here and there on some of those issues that intersect both the church and politics, mm-hmm. right? That particularly intersect theology and our idea of what is the kingdom of God and salvation and what does it mean to have reconciliation not only with God and ourselves and other human beings, but also with creation. You know, right. this goes back to the whole Genesis 3 and the curse that was placed not just on people, but on the ground itself, uh-huh. right? Yeah. And that deep sense of idea. And I think both of us, both Chris and I, in probably different ways, were pushing on you a little bit with that.
And right? so I was struggling with that at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think what that really kind of poked at me and pushing me to realize that things aren't so black and white.
Right.
And that you don't have to sit in these separate camps, but you can probably yeah. interweave in between and out of them.
It was Republicans who pushed environmentalism in the 20th century. Teddy Roosevelt, mm-hmm. Dwight Eisenhower, even Richard Nixon, right? Like, I mean, most of the laws that have been created around this happened during Republican administrations. This isn't a Republican versus Democrat, right versus left thing. I mean, it's become that, but it wasn't that initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, I think you see the same thing happening in the church today, far beyond the issue of climate change. We get caught up in the media. And, I mean, particularly this week, I mean, we're watching, you know, Congress interview
Mark Zuckerberg
yeah. and Facebook and the effect social media has on all of us and the bifurcation that's taken place because of that. And we're the body of Christ. We're supposed to be able to transcend that, move beyond that, push through all that and be a place where dialogue, conversation, discussion can take place, where we value one another. I mean, this is a 1 Corinthians 12 conversation that we are supposed to value each part of the body, even yeah. the parts that are considered to be not even ones that we make visible out there.
Right.
And how do we value one another?
Trying to
particular beliefs and ideas.
Being able to see how it all fits together.
Mm-hmm.
And when we live in a society like we do right now, that's very hard to do because we want to split people up into different groups and camps, and you're either Republican or you're Democrat or you're liberal, conservative, Christian, atheist. And so being the body of Christ is seeing all those things for what they are and recognizing them and being able to talk about them together to move forward.
Yes.
Transcending it, mm-hmm. right? Because I think some things are past politics, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's always, we get into this violent cycle, I think, because Republicans believe that the free market and business and corporations will solve problems.
Sure.
But the government doesn't, right?
Yeah.
And then, but Democrats trust too much in the government solving the problems.
Supposedly.
And business and corporations are evil and they shouldn't be trusted. So it's this weird cycle that keeps happening that, and...
But, you know, in some ways that's reversed here in the age of Trump, you know. I mean, I think the constituency that elected him is a different group than those particular definitions you just provided, right? It's a lot of folks who are from kind of the old union world who used to vote, you know, blue, essentially, and a whole lot of folks who... are a certain type of red, essentially, right?
Yeah.
You come together, and as much as I may disagree with certain things going on in today's administration, what I do think is good is a reconfiguration of those definitions, right? And I think it will happen on, and is happening on the left, you know? The left has become richer, more educated, and... that used to be a group that classically voted Republican. And so that's shifting not only our politics, it shifts our church demographics
mm-hmm.
as well. And so I think particularly for New Hope in Castle Rock and us here at Grace here in Highlands Ranch, that shifts the type of people who are even interested in our churches
mm-hmm.
because it's not necessarily the you can't necessarily guess how people voted in the last election.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. So beyond that, at Trinity, you guys, how many years were you there?
Just 2 years.
Just 2 years?
Yeah. So we were in Chicago for 3 while I was at McCormick, and the last 2 years of that was at Trinity.
Right. 2009.
And I came, I came out here to Colorado in the summer of 2011.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we left December 2010 because mm-hmm. I graduated.
Correct.
Michelle graduated mm-hmm. the previous May.
Mm-hmm. And somewhere in there, I did your wedding.
We got married. Yeah. You and Sarah did our premarital counseling.
Oh, that's right.
Which
had to have been pretty good. You're still together.
Well, it's so interesting now because we do premarital counseling for couples and. To be on the other side of it and kind of watch it. It's kind mm-hmm. of fun.
Right.
Because sometimes in that position, you have no idea what you're getting into, no idea of some of the things you haven't talked about. And that's what I find with our premarital counseling. We bring up some things and there's like this deer in the headlights look and people are like, oh, I never thought of that.
Never thought of that.
Never thought we should talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, so
oh yes,
that was a fun time. I think that's really fun. Where we kind of, well, no, because I asked you to do our wedding before we even started premarital counseling, didn't I?
I believe so.
And so do you remember, I remember asking a professor at Trinity if, because I was working in that mode of black and white, right?
Yes.
And I was asking him, I think I was worried if our marriage would not be legitimate or not, if because you weren't technically like ordained PCUSA at the time. You're
right,
you're ordained,
I wasn't.
You were ordained in a different group.
Yeah,
but like
lots of different groups.
And I remember asking him, does it matter if they're not ordained?
Right.
And I think his answer was, he said, me personally, I'd rather have somebody ordained do it.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
And
right.
I was kind of worried. But now I'm like,
Right.
Whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing. You know, I think, particularly as Presbyterians, you know, we do get caught up around that. And I think there's a piece of it that is good to get caught up in, because it's a sense that another larger body of people have examined a person, their educational background,
right,
yeah, experience, all those sort of things, psychological issues, all those sort of things, mm-hmm, and have put some sort of endorsement on them and calling on them.
Right.
On the other hand, I think where we go astray as Presbyterians is thinking that that somehow an ordained human being is somehow better, more holy, more sacred than anyone else.
But right? They are. Don't give away secrets here.
I was called Moses on the mountain, that our people oftentimes don't want to necessarily go onto the mountain, experience God themselves. They would prefer us to do it for right. them, just as Moses did for yeah. the people. And in some ways, I'm perfectly content to play that role, but I'm also sad that more people don't want to go to the mountain themselves.
Uh-huh.
So,
because it's, which is another part of, at least my side of the story of us meeting. Mm-hmm. So you did premarital counseling. Then you married us. You came out to Iowa. I remember that morning at the wedding, you forgot your tie at the hotel.
Oh yeah. That's right.
And you had to go back and get it, and you're like, don't tell Michelle.
She was a little stressed, being her wedding day, and I was like, I can be back here in 40 minutes.
And you got pulled over, though.
I got pulled over by a police officer in Iowa. It was almost blizzard-like conditions, all because my license plate corner had a license plate holder over it that barely covered up like 20th of a piece of a letter.
Right.
And it was like the police officer was just bored and wanted to pull someone over in the middle of a blizzard.
But didn't you have Illinois plates?
Yeah, I had Illinois
plates. So like, why? Because that's not an Illinois law.
Because apparently, according to the police officer, anyone who is in Iowa has to have their full license plate.
Oh my gosh.
Fully uncovered, completely, even though you could read every aspect of my license plate. You know, I mean, it was one of those encounters where I was already stressed driving through a blizzard to get a tie, right, for your wedding.
Why didn't you just, we could have, like, gotten a tie.
Yeah, that in retrospect, we should have just taken someone else's tie
right.
and put it on me. Yes. But, you know, it was funny.
Nobody was thinking that way.
Because I'm looking at this police officer going, here I am in a suit in the middle of a blizzard, you know, mm-hmm. and he finally asks sort of why. And it's like, well, I'm officiating a wedding, right? He doesn't put two and two together that means I'm a minister, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that holy Moses card does come in handy, particularly when you're pulled over by a police officer on a snowy day.
Yeah, so we got married. You married us.
Yeah.
And then you guys went back to Trinity, finished out the semester, second semester there, and then yeah. you were interviewing for places out here.
Yes.
Which is funny because Michelle and I, before I chose Western Theological Seminary, we had actually looked at Fuller as a campus down in
Colorado Springs.
And we had thought about moving out here for that. But I just thought it'd be easier to go to a seminary in my denomination than
yeah.
it's just easier that way.
It was. Instead of
jumping through hoops and
get a scholarship, the whole deal. Yeah.
Yep. And so we were there for 3.5 years and you guys moved out here, and during that time, I did end up calling you quite a bit
uh-huh.
because of seminary stuff.
Uh-huh.
And also, it was that spring. It was before you moved out here, I think.
Probably.
No.
I remember having a conversation with you.
But you said it was, you were in Park Meadows Mall.
I was in Park Meadows Mall, yeah,
but
when you called me. And I was like, oh, great. Here's a phone call right in the middle of my wife shopping. This is excellent.
That was when Rob Bell's book Love Wins had come out.
Yes.
And I was a fan of Rob Bell because I read Velvet Elvis freshman year of college. And that was one of those catalysts that kind of helped me start thinking about things a little differently.
Yes.
Faith development wise. And so I read Love Wins, and that was a big deal at the time because he was still in West Michigan, half hour away from our seminary campus. He would sometimes use our library at our seminary.
And hate was still winning
at the time. And hate was still winning. and so then there was a book club in our seminary that would get together and talk about and critique the book. And I remember reading it, and it made so much sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I was bothered by that.
You were bothered by the fact that something made sense to you.
Yes.
But
because it was being labeled heretical.
Right.
And all of that. And so I was worried about my soul. I was worried about going to hell.
And lots of other people were worried about your soul too, Jordan. And going to hell. That's very non-Presbyterian of you. And frankly, very non-Reformed of you. But okay.
But I remember on the phone, I was telling you, I was like, I'm worried I might go to hell if I believe this stuff.
Right. And, which told me immediately, you're not a good Calvinist. But
yeah. I was struggling with a lot of things. I always tell people that seminary was the place that kind of, it was like a shedding of this faith I had been taught and grown up with, which wasn't bad at all. Like it got me to where I was, you know, and it was all part of the process. But had to shed it off.
Yes.
And that felt very painful and very uncertain and scary. And you feel like people aren't going to accept you.
That's precisely what seminary is about, though. Like, people think seminary is about education, but it's really about that experience and journey right there. Shedding the faith that you've taken for granted, deconstructing it, examining yourself. Going through that grief, I would even call, for most, almost every seminarian I know describes it as depression, right? Yeah. Like you go through this period where it's like, wow, most second year seminarians that I know are pretty much atheists by the time they are in the middle of their second year. And then something begins to bloom, something new, a more robust faith comes back, and you came in a caterpillar and you come out a butterfly, you know, and you don't need to laugh, buddy, because that was you, man. That was, you learned how to fly, you know.
Oh,
it was beautiful and amazing. And Jesus loves you and me.
Well, I mean, that's exactly. When I went to seminary, there was people in my home church that said to me, be careful about going to seminary. People's faith die there. And which is technically true.
Yeah.
I mean, a certain faith dies for a new one to be born again. And we are just having...
Amazingly that we believe in that story of death, burial, and resurrection, but are so afraid of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? I mean, this this is the whole point, right? Like, there are lots of folks in culture, but particularly in our churches, that are afraid of this stretching that might take place, afraid that somehow God needs protected, which is the greatest heresy in the world right there, that somehow our great, large, powerful God needs protected by little old us.
Yeah. We've created a huge thing, apologetics all revolving around that.
Exactly. And yet, it's precisely our own faith that must die. I mean, this is the experience of John chapter 3 with Jesus and Nicodemus. He's looking at Nicodemus going, yeah, unless you're born again, born from above. And that happens over and over and over again in our lives.
But people think that's just primarily a one time decision that you're going to be born again Christian.
Yeah, that's...
But
which is unfortunate that people landed on that. I mean, it's because they associate it with heaven and hell and afterlife and the whole revivalist movement of the late 19th, early of 20th century and all those sort of things. It's when we can see it as being going through this death, burial, and resurrection experience over and over again, how much more beautiful for us, right? Mm-hmm. And that means we're continually growing in this life, continually becoming more like Christ, which is the very thing that we've been predestined for, to bring it back to Calvin and Presbyterianism and the Reformed faith, that we won't be predestined to heaven, but predestined to become conformed to the image of his son, as Paul describes it.
Right.
Ah.
That's such a hot topic in colleges, Christian colleges.
It is.
Especially Calvinist ones about predestination and election. And
right. Because they don't read the scripture closely, though.
Right. And I remember it wasn't until seminary, my first year of seminary after college, that I started to reframe that. I was like, I guess God predestines people to go to heaven and hell. And then I was like, wait a second. Election comes up a lot with the Israelites. But yet there isn't like this guarantee anywhere with the Israelites that they will get to the promised land, like not promised land, heaven, right?
Yeah. In fact, heaven's never discussed in relationship to the Old Testament and the Israelites.
So. Right.
Right.
And what I saw when they talk about election with Israelites was they were elected for a specific purpose to kind of reflect the love of God to the world. And they were pretty horrible at it. And they messed up time and time again.
Sure, I would push back. I would not say they were horrible at it. I would say they were human about it.
Right, yes. They took a lot of training, a lot of God kind of pulling them forward.
So kind of like you.
Or everybody. Not just me. But yeah, that's the journey everybody should be taking, right? We talked about this 2 weeks ago on Easter because it's about the resurrection. Is that
we talked on Easter?
No, not you and me.
Oh, okay.
As pastors.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We did talk on Easter. We had lunch.
We did, but by the time lunch of Easter rolls around for us pastors, we're kind of in a daze. But yes, on Easter morning when we were still fully focused and not fully exhausted yet by Holy Week. Yes.
That Jesus's resurrection isn't just simply about Jesus' sacrifice for us that makes us go to heaven or hell, but it's a blueprint of what life should be, being molded into Christ's image. Yes. That we have things that we have to put to death in order to be resurrected.
Yes.
But once again, Christians and churches in general are horrible at that. We don't want to let go of things. We don't want to be able to let them die in order for something new to be born. Like it takes a long time for us to kind of let go of it.
Well, sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, part of that is just, we've created these institutions because we like tradition. We like routine. It's familiar to us. And there's a really great aspect of that, but there's also the side of that death, burial, and resurrection, and saying that something new needs to emerge, something new needs to resurrect out of this old body. And particularly in our current cultural situation, the world, I wouldn't even say is changing, the world has changed. And what is needed from the church in today's world, I'm not sure is being delivered very well by us as pastors or our churches, which is part of the reason why so many people out in culture aren't interested in what we are doing, including our own people who are attending less and less each Sunday because they want to be in the mountains with their families or skiing or hiking or doing all those things because there's this massive separation between humanity right now and what it means to really be human. And I'm not sure we're always delivering that on Sunday mornings. Yeah. It would behoove us to find out precisely why people would prefer to be in the mountains 3 out of 4 Sundays a month and only in our worship services 1 out of those 4.
Behoove?
Behoove, yes. Behoove, thus and therefores and
Justin's showing off his big words now.
Hey, I grew up Baptist and we read the King James Version of the Bible, okay?
Thou
my vision.
Thou stinketh.
Thou stinketh. Thou stinketh is a wonderful phrase from the New Testament. Old Testament?
New Testament. I think Lazarus story.
Oh, it stinketh.
Yeah.
It stinketh.
It stinketh.
Yes.
Yeah. Or the Balaam story of the talking donkey. And so in the Old King James Version, it uses the word ass for donkey.
Well, yeah.
So it's talking ass.
It's a talking ass.
It's wonderful. King James has so many comedic tones to it that you can... that is lost in
that
modern
English. That is very
English.
Much lost yeah. in modern English, yes. It has a poetic quality about it.
Exactly.
Yes.
So then I think we all kept in touch for during seminary and everything, just off and on. And then we decided we wanted to move out here or check it out because Michelle right. wanted to go to Colorado Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And so we flew out here to kind of check it out, do some interviews for me, and we stayed with you guys.
Yes.
And I think we didn't talk a whole lot between those years while I was in seminary and you guys moved out here, but I think we were the type of friends that when we do get together, we just kind of pick up where we left off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we followed you here. And yeah, I'm a pastor, sure. you're a pastor, your wife's a therapist, my wife's a therapist.
Uh-huh. We have a lot in common. We have a lot in common. I think that's what was so fun, though, about your installation service was to be able to give just a tiny brief little hint some of all that, and from my side, just the privilege of being able to speak to your people and say things that are probably a little difficult for mm-hmm. you to say, or particularly don't ever have the setting for it, you know, right. and just how much you love New Hope, you mm-hmm. know, and love being there, and that it's part of this journey, too, of continually opening you up to new places, new worlds, new thoughts, new ideas, but more importantly, allowing you to experiment with those.
Right. And I think, and you understand this, too, because you've worked in churches like it. In the Midwest is pretty, I mean, I'm sure there's churches around here that are very much like Midwest churches, but the characteristics of a Midwest church tend to be you kind of have to fall in line with what they believe or you're a threat and they will get rid of you type of thing.
Well, yeah.
Does that make sense?
The way in particular more fundamentalist churches work are you either work with inside the system and that you can be very imperfect inside that system, but as long as you're willing to essentially admit your bad ways, and even if you don't change them, at least if you feel bad about them,
yeah,
you're still part of the community, right? They might not make you a leader, but you're still considered to be part of them because you still think like them. But if you venture off into the edges or even beyond the lines of particular beliefs or values, and then you're considered to be a heretic. But, you know, I mean, part of that is, of course, right? Like, why wouldn't they, right? Because in some ways, people like you and me are threats to that very sense of identity.
Mm-hmm.
Their entire experience is based around a common way of thinking, or maybe even a common way of ignorance. I don't know how exactly to put it, but
yeah,
we're afraid of people is the reality as human beings, and it doesn't surprise me. It's part of our evolutionary nature. But just bringing up evolutionary nature,
yeah, don't say
really would freak a lot of those folks that we grew up with,
right? And I think one of the things for me that, and I can work within those systems. I think that's one of the things I kind of like and don't like about myself at the same time, is that I'm able to kind of adapt and fit into certain groups and their characteristics. So I'd be fine working there. Yeah. I can talk the talk and everything, but my soul would be so sad. And
well, but see, this is where, like, we'll have a little bro moment here, and I'll just, like, tell you how awesome you are. But I think more people like yourself are needed in our world, though. Like, as much as you could feel that compromise inside of yourself, there has to be translators for both of these worlds, and bringing fundamentalists and progressives together, conservatives and liberals together, Republicans and Democrats together. Like, if there's not, what hope do we have of having a functioning society?
Right.
We need way more people like you in the world.
Yeah. I think that's why New Hope, I have such love for New Hope.
That it might be the hope for the world.
No, it was a place that it's a group of people.
Just
that,
saying, Ross, it could be a tagline for you
the
all.
The hope for the world.
The hope for Kassara.
That it was a place where people were really encouraging and forgiving and gracious and able to let you explore and figure things out. Because I was...
We're the place of grace. You're the place of hope.
There you go.
Make sure... Make sure we keep those separate. You know.
And the people there, I think a lot of them that I have met, they are people who have gone through the fire, that have gone through the resurrection part of faith, that they have had a faith and it wasn't working, and they did the work to figure out how to move forward and have something new branch out of it. So...
Well, I'll throw in a little more, Calvin, and just say, like, perhaps that's exactly what God intends to do with all of us. And it's not so much our own work as it's God's work in us, if we allow for it, if we're open to it. Imagine that the God of this diverse creation, the God who created things to be different from one another, right, would want us to experience diversity. Right? The artist, the creator, wants creativity, wants imagination. It really should be the first theological lesson that we learn about faith. It is Genesis 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, we're kind of running.
One moment. That was profound. We should stop and acknowledge it. Don't laugh at me.
I'll clip it out for the... I make little advertising videos. Maybe I'll clip that out for the video audio. I actually wrote it down here. But we're getting there on time, and you need to get ready for your next thing. And I need to get going.
Yeah.
And, maybe we could do part two. We have all kinds of things to talk about. Maybe next time.
Oh, we should definitely do a part two. Maybe part two we will talk about what the Democrats need to change.
We could.
Since we I
know we haven't gotten political yet on this podcast.
No, not yet. We didn't get political at all. We didn't talk about.
I'm just saying in general at the other podcast too. The other people I interviewed.
Oh, this is the first time.
Well, one of them we talked about. The person I interviewed used to do political cartoons. With somebody else, we were talking about the Parkland shooting. Didn't really get too much in. To politics, but it's kind of one of those things that I really think the church needs to talk about more, but we're so afraid to, especially in our context, because the evangelical side has really gotten into politics. So yes. We don't want to do that.
We don't
want to
be those folks.
And so we kind of, you know, keep it at an arm's distance. But I think it influences so many people's lives and so many people are into it. And I really think sometimes for people when they believe certain things about politics, that's influencing their faith. Mm-hmm. But they think their faith is influencing that belief in politics.
Sure.
So it's just switched around and they don't realize it yet. Mm-hmm. And
That's what we'll do for podcast number two for us. Is we'll dive into a whole bunch of political issues.
Oh, you're making me anxious.
And really, really go from the frying pan into the fire. Or maybe we don't.
I think a lot of people would listen to it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people would listen to it. But
maybe I'll get emails and calls. But
right. Death threats. All sorts of different things. So.
This is just the general stuff Justin and I talk about anyway for fun.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
We're kind of geeks.
We're geeks that way. And I think it's one of those things that because we're able to have these conversations and critique left and right and also appreciate stuff on the left and the right, that we hope that the church would be a place that's able to do exactly what we're experiencing.
All right. Well.
Beloved community.
Yeah.
Being the a community, undiscovered country.
You always have to look back at the original, the disciples, and some of them were for letting the Gentiles in, and others were like, no, that's not part of it. And they still had to live with each other. They still had to
they
work together.
They should have built a wall.
Oh, God. with that, we're going to end this. thanks, Justin, for joining us. And I'll add in the intro also that you're the pastor here at Grace Presbyterian in Highlands Ranch, kind of our neighbor church to New Hope. And people can find you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, any of those?
Yes, people can find us at gracecolorado.com, as well as you can find us on our Facebook, which is Grace Presbyterian Colorado, Grace Presby Colorado, something like that. We're also on Instagram. We are not on Twitter. But yeah, just come visit us, discover Grace, and then we'll send you back to Castle Rock so you can discover hope.
Well, all right. we'll do this again some other time.
Sounds great.
All right.
Fantastic.